Oh, good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning, 9 o'clock, and my name is Beth Pike. Today, our host, Latara Smith, is going to be talking with Mrs. Etterling DeBarge, and they'll be discussing domestic violence that she had encountered when she was married to her first husband and how she survived and thrived. And then, in the second half, our producer, Jeff Humfeld, will be speaking with Reverend Esther Holzendorf of the Human Dignity and Economic Justice Coalition about their concerns for police reform bills in the Missouri House. Of course, we'll have our calendar of events in the middle of the show and the 420 drug war news at the end of the show. But up next is Latara and her guest.
Awesome. Thank you. Hi, I'm Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and I'm here today, and I'm going to be interviewing Mrs. Etterling DeBarge. Today, we're going to be speaking on the subject of domestic violence. Okay. Well, we're going to try to get Ms. DeBarge back on the line. She's actually doing this interview long distance over the phone. But we're going to be talking about domestic violence, Ms. DeBarge was a victim of domestic violence, and some of you all know her story by watching Unsung, or some of you all may even know her children, Elle and James DeBarge, Chico DeBarge. They're from a very known R&B group, and Ms. DeBarge actually encountered a lot of domestic violence during her marriage, and she actually has a book that she has written in reference to domestic violence, and we were hoping, I think we're still having some problems getting her on the phone, and hopefully we'll get that taken care of here in just a second. But one of the questions that I was going to ask Mrs. DeBarge is, why did she think that domestic violence is so hard for those who are being abused to leave the relationship? Since she's actually not on the line to kind of cover that, you know, I just want to add, you know, what I know, actually being a personal a victim of domestic violence myself. And I know for me, there was a lot of factors that was hard for me to leave the domestic violence relationship. Number one, I had a lot of children. Okay, do we have Ms. DeBarge now? Hi, Ms. DeBarge, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, okay. I've already introduced you and told just a little bit about you and a little bit about your history with domestic violence. And I was just going over the first question that I was going to ask you. And first, I want to welcome you to the show. You know, everyone knows you on social media as Mama D, the infamous Mama D. And, you know, I know, of course, we know you from Unsung. And I've already let everyone know you are the awesome mother of the R&B group DeBarge. Okay, so I know you're kind of coming in a little bit late, but the question, one of the questions I was wanting to ask you is, why do you think, Mama D, that domestic violence is so hard for those who are being abused in a relationship like that to actually leave the relationship? Why do you think that's so?
Well, a lot of it speaks of fear.
Fear.
How fear can paralyze you. And when you get paralyzed, you know you can't move. And
right.
There could be so much fear involved there. The fear of him hurting her, or him doing something to her children, or not being able to make it financially without him. All kinds of fear is in this person that has to make this large decision.
Right.
So they're paralyzed by fear. And that's one of the things that keep them from making that move, because they don't know what else to do because they're so fearful.
Right. You know, and that's one thing I know that we talked about, you know, personally with my struggle of dealing with domestic violence, and you've had your struggles with it. And for me, I had a lot of kids. And I think that's something that you can relate to, because you had a lot of children. And for me to leave that relationship, and I had, five or six kids at the time, you know, that was very challenging for me. I mean, do you agree with that?
Oh, yes, I definitely agree. Okay. Very, very, very difficult. Nobody wants to be bothered with your kids, especially if they're hyper like mine was. Nobody wants to be bothered with eight boys and, you know, two girls. And eight of the boys are just like, I mean, got so much energy, they don't know what to do.
Right.
So they get frustrated, you get frustrated, and you got another issue to deal with.
Right. Do you think, Mama D, that it's easier now for those who are victims of domestic violence to get out of that relationship than it was back then for you? I mean, do you think that there's more resources now?
It's easier now because they have a lot of programs, a lot of things happening for people that are in domestic violence to help them. They can have different programs that will reach out and give them directions and give them instructions on what to do and how to do it. But still, it's a big move, and you're the only one that can make that move. In spite of how many programs are out there, you've got to make the move, and it's an emotional thing, okay?
Right.
So it's easier, like I say, because there's more offering them now. Because when I was raising my kids, there was nothing.
Right.
But now there's plenty programs and things out there to offer them and give them some suggestions on what to do.
Mm-hmm. I know, Mama D, that another problem is victims that are experiencing domestic violence, they keep silent. They keep silent. Why do you think that is, that people keep silent? They usually keep silent until it's just most definitely evident that this is happening.
Well, I really, again, fear, because I said earlier, fear kicks in. And fear does all these things to you. It causes all type of emotions. I mean, emotions are all over the place. So it's like you don't know how to deal with them.
Right.
So sometimes you try to deal with them, it's more painful than dealing with them because you're so fearful. You know, some people just say, well, it's better that I don't even think about this or talk about this than to think about it and talk about it because then I get more and more fearful. So sometimes people just don't want to talk about it because it's too painful, more than just dealing with it.
Right.
You know, I think denial is a terrible place to go, but sometimes people have to go there because they can't handle it.
Right, right. Well, I know for me, I began to experience domestic violence when I was in a high school dating relationship. And I think like so many victims, you know, in my mind, I thought this is going to get better. You know, he's going to stop this, or, you know, it's something I did. I shouldn't have said what I said, or maybe I shouldn't have did what I did and he wouldn't have hit me or something. But my relationship, domestic violence, first experience with domestic violence was in high school. I mean, literally, I got hit and knocked out in the parking lot of the high school that I was attending on our lunch break, you know. And this was kept really secret because he was a star football player. I was a popular cheerleader. His mother was an English teacher there at the school. And I mean, and they kept this so quiet. And, you know, I thought, because it was kind of misconstrued. I grew up without a father, so I really didn't know love and things as such. So I took that as, oh, he loves me. That's why he did that. But this is going to get better. And I ended up moving forward and marrying this individual like my freshman year in college. And it only got worse. It only gets worse. So, Mama D, what advice do you have for those young ladies that are in these domestic violence relationships and, you know, this has been a history, you know, it's not just one hit, one slap, one kick, one punch, but it's over and over again because, you know, the cycle is that they come back and they say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do this, I'm not going to do it again. What would be your advice to a young lady that's actually experiencing that right now?
Well, in my situation, I just did it. I didn't think about what I was going to do, how I was going to do it, where I was going to go. I just said, look, that's it. I'm out of here. I had no clue to where I was going to take my kids. But I knew if I thought about it too much, he would convince me to stay.
Right.
So I wouldn't allow myself to think about it because there were always reasons why I should stay. So I just told myself, hey, I'm not going back to hell. This is hell. I don't want it. My house is beautiful. My furniture is beautiful. Everything, but it was not a home. It was a house. And I made up my mind quickly that whatever I had to do, I had to have faith and believe that God was going to give me the strength to make that move. I made it, and I didn't know how it was going to work out. But when I made up my mind, I was tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired. I just made up my mind, hey, I'm going to just do it, and I'm going to have faith in God that he's going to work this thing out in my behalf, and he did just that. I just did it. Bam,
right.
Like this, like that. And I was like, why are you crazy, girl? You're going to take all those kids? You don't even know where you're going to go. No, I didn't know none of that. But I was walking out on faith, and I just stood out there on a street in front of a school with all these kids, not having a clue to where I was going to go.
Right.
And it was a faith walk, believing that God did not want me to live like that.
Right.
I knew he did not want me to live like that. So I just made that faith walk, and I stood on the sidewalk. The next day, I called some services, and they said, look, you find a place, and we'll pay the rent, Then next time, hey, sky was the limit. After that, I had to make the move.
Right.
Nobody could make it for me. I had to make the decision. No one could make it for me. I just did it. I didn't think about it. I just did it.
Right.
Thinking it could be dangerous sometimes.
Right. Oh, yeah, it can, most definitely so. And a lot of women don't understand, but being in a domestic violence relationship can actually, I mean, it's such an endangerment, not just to you, but also to your children. And a lot of people don't understand, but, you know, the Child Protective Services will remove your children if you continue to keep them. Right, right.
Different back then.
Oh, yeah, back then.
Not different back then.
Right, but that's something most definitely that's going on now, that children are being removed from the home when the mother refuses to exit out of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So on the subject of children, Mama D, do you think that domestic violence affects children?
Oh, most definitely, because some of them become the environment that they were in, and they think that that's okay to slap mom.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's because dad slapped, you know, my mom around, so he's supposed to do that, you know. And that it's a bad example of what a boy should do to a woman, because I feel like a mother and a father are the perfect example of what your children will see with the life, what life is about, good or bad and ugly. So if they live in an ugly situation, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be a lot like that. You're going to see a lot of that behavior in that child.
Right. Right, and that's so true. That is so true. So, Mama D, what other advice would you have? I know finances is also an issue. Why come some people don't leave the relationship? I know that for me it was. You know, my husband was the breadwinner. He was a fireman. I was a stay-at-home mom taking care of the children, and you know. Though he held such an awesome job as being a fireman and things as such, it was actually it was a shock to his coworkers and to his captain when they found out exactly what I was going through. But because my husband at the time was the breadwinner and I was a stay-home mom, I know that created a situation for me that, you know, I couldn't leave.
Well, that's the case for a lot of women. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, When you, at the end of the day, and you think about it, you're saying to yourself, you know, I got to do this. God, who's gonna? I mean, I had to leave home too. I had anything I wanted. He'd give me money, all that. But I just couldn't stand the violence. I couldn't stand the beating. I couldn't take it. I wouldn't think about how much money he gives me every week and how beautiful my home was, and I can't leave this. And that meant nothing to me. The only thing I wanted was peace of mind and my kids to be safe.
Right, right.
Well,
right.
I think about, you know, what am I going to do for money? That didn't matter to me. Only thing that mattered to me is get my kids. Like they say, get the heck out of Dodge. That's what it mattered to me. I got the heck out of Dodge.
Right.
And I'm glad I did, because after I made that big move, the sky was the limit. But I had to do it. I had to do it. People couldn't do it for me. I had to do it.
And, you know, Mama D, that's a very, very important point that you just made. No one is going to do this for you. You have to, and I, you know, for anyone that's listening to this presentation this morning, if you are a victim of domestic violence, please hear us as we say, if you don't do it, if you don't address the situation, if you don't make and not just make, but take the steps to leave that relationship, you're going to remain in it. And that's a very important, valid statement, Mama D, that you just made. You know, and I know, like you said, Mama D, it's fear. Sometimes it's finances. Sometimes it's, you know, I've got a bunch of kids. Who's going to help us? You know,
when you get tired, nothing matters anymore about what I got and what I don't have. You just want to get out of there. You just want to go.
Right.
You don't think about, I mean, when you really get sick and tired, you just want to get out of there. I mean, you can't get your head banged no more. You can't take no more, none of that stuff no more. So you can't think about the finances. If you get tired enough, you can't think about nothing. You just think about, I want this to stop.
Right. And you know,
and you do what you do to make it stop.
Right.
And you ain't thinking about, well, I got the rent due next week and I got to put some food in the house. You don't care. You just want peace.
You know, and you know, Mama D, I know that we've had our intimate talk show, like a second mom to me, and you know, I'm gonna share this on the air, and that is, you know, for me, what it took for me to leave, and I've never really, you know, just kind of talked openly about this, except sharing it with you and other close family members. But what it took for me to leave finally was I was beat so bad. I was beat so bad, Mama D, that my mother, when she came into my home, looking at one side of my face, because I took so many blows to the right side of my face, that you couldn't even tell who I was. I was struck so many times in my face that I literally had to, I had a broke jaw. My mouth had to be wired, okay? And it was horrible, you know? And that was the breaking point for me, to see my mother come in there and scream and, oh, my God, my baby, look at you. What did you, you know? And my kids witnessed that. My kids witnessed that. And, you know, Mama D, to this day, my children have nightmares about that, you know, because my little boys were trying to come in there and save me. And, you know, they had their little plastic bats and they were trying to hit him and get him off of me, and they couldn't do it. They were being shoved down to the floor. And, you know, that's what it took for me to leave. But I pray that because, you know, that some of these ladies that are listening, it won't take that. You know, that it won't take that, that they will make the brave decision to go ahead and leave these relationships, because as you and I both know, Mama D, is not going to get any better. And that's most definitely the message I want to send out. It's not going to get any better. I don't care how many I love yous, how many Michael Kors purses he's going to come back and buy, how many dozen of roses, you know, new cars, whatever. It's not going to get any better.
This is about, I love him. I love him. That's my husband. My husband. No, you know, right now it's about loving you. Right now it's about loving your children. It's not about loving your husband. Obviously, loving him is not working.
Right.
So now it's about, I love me. Right. I love my children. And right. I'm out of here. You know, because I've heard women say, but I love him. But I love him so much that I know I shouldn't stay in this relationship, because it's abusive, but I love him. Like I said, and apparently you don't love yourself enough to take yourself out of that relationship and your children enough to get them out of that relationship. If you can't love you, you can't love nobody. If you would beat up on yourself like that, you'll let anybody else beat up on you like that. So you got to get up out of Dodge and say, look, enough of the beating. I got a future. I got a purpose. And this is stopping me. And I'll never go nowhere if I continue to say this beating, but to the graveyard or to the same solemn.
Right.
And that's not my.
Well, we were just getting ready to talk about Mama DeBarge's book. I don't know if we're going to try to get her back on the line or not to talk about her book. But we'll see here. But Mama DeBarge has written a book. And the book is very informational, very inspiring, and very encouraging. And we were just getting ready to get her to talk about the book. And just in case we can't, for some reason, get her back on the line, we want to refer you to her Facebook page. Actually, there's a link on her Facebook page where you can order her book. She has written an awesome book about domestic violence, and her daughter, Edderlene, well, I'm sorry, you all know Bunny. You all know Edderlene by Bunny. Bunny is actually named after her mother. She also wrote a book in reference to domestic violence, and those books are really awesome. And like I said, very encouraging, very inspiring. And I would, you know, recommend that you guys go to her Facebook page, and you can, like I said, you can order that book from the link. Do we have her back on the phone? Okay.
But she made a lot of interesting, you know, the perspectives that she came in with it at. And one thing, I mean, again, a hard decision to make. It's got to be a hard decision to make.
Yes.
And, you know, when you're caught up in the web of this abuse, then you're not seeing things as clearly as others who might be looking in at that web.
Right.
And one thing I thought as I was listening to her information was, you know, the abuse isn't always physical.
Oh, of course.
There's psychological abuse, and that can come, you know, in the form of your partner being passive aggressive, or maybe just berating.
Right. And with you mentioning that, you know, this is what I tell a very good friend of mine named Lavelle. I tell Lavelle all the time, you know, it's very hard even to move forward in a relationship with another person because you're so wounded and scarred from what you went through or the domestic violence that you previously mm-hmm. experienced. And though those wounds can heal, it takes time. And then sometimes there's triggers that kind of reopen that wound. And, you know, I tell that to a good friend of mine named Lavelle, and I don't think he gets it sometimes, but it can cause you to have problems moving forward in relationships. You know, or you look at him like, hey, dude, are you going to be just like this ex that I had?
You showed me just one little sign, and I'm going to flash back to the experiences I had before.
I'm going to flash back to it. Exactly.
And
exactly.
It's not fair to that person that you're now involved with, but it's really hard as an individual to not look back on our past experiences and have somewhat of a focus towards what's happening to us now and in the future.
Right. That is so true. That is so true. So, you know, it can affect moving forward as well. So, but I think do we have her back on the phone yet?
I think Jeff is working towards that. The thing I was also noticing were the statistics that 25% of women will be victims of domestic violence and that it harms women more than diabetes, lung cancer, or even stroke.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the statistics are telling us that this is really broad spread. And, you know, and another thing, though, that I would clarify is that domestic violence can go both ways.
Oh, yes, most definitely so.
It's not always against the female in the relationship. There are times when the male is the one who is receiving the physical abuse or the berating.
Yes.
Or, like I said, the psychological abuse.
Yes, yes. I've made that point several times that it can go most definitely both ways. Most definitely so. And so we're not bashing the men here, okay?
No, yeah, exactly. We're not bashing men.
It can
men.
Go both ways, you
it's,
know.
It's more that, you know, because something is happening in society that's allowing this to be acceptable. And it's not acceptable behavior.
Right.
If you can't talk things over in a real relationship like adults, then you might want to get some counseling or some help to keep you away from the anger side.
Right.
You know, go to your corner, go to your room.
right.
And settle down.
Well, you know, I could hear my mom say over and over again, look, girl, if you guys are not going to get along, you need to leave each other alone. Those were my mom's words to me. So, most definitely.
Well, and again, you know, a lot of times when couples maybe get into later years, that would even be a harder decision to make because you've been in this relationship for so long, you don't want to go back into the single world. Is it better that I just accept what's going on in my life, continue this abusive cycle, or do I make a decision to end it now and go ahead and get on with my life?
Right, right.
And so again, that makes for a very, very hard decision to make.
Right. And you know, like she said, too, we have a lot more resources. I know here locally we have Mrs. E, and she has the GYRL organization. Okay. And she is such an awesome advocate for those who are, you know, dealing with domestic violence. And I was hoping that she was going to call in and maybe tell a little bit about her upcoming event that she's having. But I will refer you all to her Facebook page. It's GYRL. And like I said, they're having an awesome event coming up in May. I can't remember the specifics of it right now. But if you go to her Facebook page, she's always good about keeping everything listed on there. And she's very active. I don't think it's a weekend that Mrs. E is not doing something, you know, speaking out against domestic violence. I believe she is a great resource here locally for us in Kansas City for the victims that are dealing with and experiencing domestic violence. And, you know, that makes a difference. That makes a difference, you know, when someone feel that, you know that they have this outlet, this resource that they can go and they can seek assistance and seek help in.
And so. I agree. So for our listeners, if you are needing assistance, as Latara had said, there's websites available. Go to the internet, look this up, and seek and get the help that you need.
Yes, most definitely so, because it's there. Now, another thing that we were talking about is the fact that domestic violence it doesn't just harm the person that's actually experiencing the domestic violence, but it affects those that are closely connected to that person, the children. You know, statistics show also that, that domestic violence can lead to some mental health issues like PTSD and things as such. Mm. But I think we're kind of running out of time right now. And I want to thank everyone for listening to the show today and for tuning in.
And thank you so much for being here and having your guest on the air. We do have Jeff coming up with his interview next. Stay with us here on 90.1 FM KKFI.
Now, the calendar for April 11th, 2016. A grassroots gathering of concerned citizens against police misconduct will be attending the April 12th meeting of the KC Board of Police Commissioners. The meeting will be Tuesday, April 12th, in the community room at 1125 Locust, beginning at 10 a.m. The purpose of this meeting will be to address the complaints about the use of pepper spray on protesters and innocent bystanders during the Donald Trump rally on March 12th. You are invited to join with the NAACP and MADP as they come together for a lobby day in Jefferson City dealing with racial justice and the death penalty, Tuesday, April 12th. The program will begin with an address by U.S. Representative William Lacey Clay at 10:15 a.m. and lunch at 12 noon. Buses will be available from Kansas City. For more details, contact Stacy, that's STACI, at MADPMO.org. You can join Stand Up KC at their rally and march to protest the McWages paid to fast food workers and other low-wage workers. They will be gathering Thursday, April 14th at 5 p.m. for the rally at 63rd and Paseo and begin the march at 5:30 p.m. Many of these workers have to rely on public assistance just to meet basic needs while companies make billions in profits. Stand Up KC feels it's time for corporations to pay their fair share in taxes instead of forcing taxpayers to foot the bill. And it's time for $15 and a union for all workers. The Wyandotte County Ethnic Festival will be held Saturday, April 16th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. inside the Athletic Field House at Kansas City, Kansas Community College, 7250 State Avenue, Kansas City, Kansas. The festival offers you and your family a variety of delicious ethnic foods, entertainment featuring dancers, music, and singing performances, over 40 educational culture booths, and an opportunity to celebrate the contributions of two individuals as legends of diversity. For more information, see their website, FreeWebs, that's FreeWebs.com/WYCO Ethnic Festival. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And this is Jeff Humfeld again. And last Wednesday, the Human Dignity and Economic Justice Coalition held a press conference to call on Representative Sean Rhodes, Chair of the Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness Committee of the Missouri House, to allow hearings on four bills that would reform police practices in the state. They are House Bills 1516, 1520, 1521, and 1522. The bills address the issues of body cameras for police, gathering data on racial profiling, searches and seizures, and traffic stops, requiring written permission to be obtained by police before searching an automobile, am requiring the state to develop a tracking system for complaints against officers when they change jurisdictions. All of these bills are sponsored by Representative Brandon Ellington of Kansas City. A war of words has erupted, with Representative Ellington charging that Representative Rhodes is a bigot and blocking the bills because of his background in law enforcement. Representative Rose has charged that Representative Ellington won't come to him to discuss the bills, changes to the bills, and is being childish. This is Jeff Humfeld, and with me today is Reverend Esther Holzendorf of the Human Dignity and Economic Justice Coalition. We do want to welcome you to Jaws of Justice Radio, Reverend Esther.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I would like to start out with the introductory remarks from the press conference that you made the day of the press conference. So if we could go to that now.
The purpose of the press conference is to address concerns that Representative Sean Rhodes, chair of the Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness Committee, will not allow certain bills out of committee that directly addresses public safety. These bills are sponsored by Representative Brandon Ellington, and they address concerns that has to do with racial profiling, officers wearing body cameras, illegal stops, illegal searches of vehicles, and tracking of complaints against officers from one agency to another. We are all aware of the horrible things that take place between law enforcement and citizens. If there is nothing to hide, then Representative Rhodes and the committee should want transparency. There are six ex-police officers on the committee to include Representative Rhodes. The legislators we send to the People's House are sent to represent all the people. And we all know that people are abused by police officers. So therefore, good law enforcement has nothing to hide, and the cameras will provide protection for officers and citizens. So that is the basic reason for us being here today.
Okie doke. Last year, which was when the session started, it was about 6 months or so after the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, and the then Speaker of House, John Deal, declared that there would be no Ferguson agenda in the House. What was the response of the coalition at that time? Do you remember?
I really can't say for sure. We were dealing with so many things back then, so I can't actually say exactly what our response was as far as that particular killing was concerned.
Well, you know, Representative Deal left the House in disgrace, and mm-hmm. these bills, you know, were introduced in the last session also, and nothing, of course, came of them. They, because the Speaker of the House didn't want them to go anywhere, but he left in disgrace at the end of the session. Was there maybe some hope that, you know, this agenda would move forward, you know, this year?
Yeah, there was, to answer your question, particularly in light of the fact that in 2014, Attorney General Chris Coster said he was disturbed by new statistics showing that Missouri law enforcement officers have continued to pull over black motorists at a significantly greater rate than white drivers. Now, that was in 2014. So it's hard and difficult for most of us to understand why we continue to have the statistical proof that shows this racial disparity in traffic stops and in searches, arrest rates, stop rates. And law enforcement continues to say that everything they do is above board and it's all fair. And then you turn right around and you have I thought he was an ex-police officer, coming to find out he's still a reserve deputy, who is in fact the chair of the Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness Committee with the Missouri House of Representatives. Now, Representative Sean Rhodes, to me, presents many problems. First of all, the majority of his committee, of which he's the chair, are themselves ex-police officers. The second thing is, in an interview on more than one occasion, he has referred to Representative Ellington either as being childish or as being unimportant and his bills insignificant. I mean, the bottom line is that's what he's saying, that his bills really are not important. When you read the interviews and you listen to Representative Sean Rhodes speak, it speaks to us, members of the coalition, that Representative Rhodes is saying Representative Ellington should come and sit down with him and, in fact, ask him to help him to write his bills. Representative Ellington is from Midtown, Kansas City, Missouri. It's my understanding that Representative Rhodes is from West Plains or some place. But why would a representative from one district go to a representative from another district and ask him, tell me what you want me to put in these bills? That doesn't make sense. So that's why we refer to Representative Rhodes as being a bigot and a racist.
Okay. We're going to go to the second clip that we have from the press conference. This is Reverend Mims, who is also a member of the coalition. And he's going to tell about some of the concerns that he has for this.
We are very concerned about the horrible things that take place between law enforcement and citizens. And as a coalition, we don't see a reason why these bills have not been heard and have not received a favorable vote. We are asking that they be passed into law for the protection of the citizens as well as law enforcement. We believe where there's clear policy, procedure, and protocol being followed, there's nothing to be afraid of, and there's no reason why everything that is done cannot be shown. Failure to allow this kind of transparency gives members of this coalition pause to ask why. And we firmly believe that we send legislators to the people's house, and we trust them, or I should say, should be able to trust them to represent all people, the affluent as well as those who are less fortunate. We know, and you know, people are killed by police officers. They're beaten, they're abused. I could call the roll from here to Florida. Good law enforcement has nothing to hide. Only those who are involved in low-life abusive behaviors have something to hide. Representative Rhodes and the committee should be as concerned about these types of people wearing a uniform that represent public safety, or at least they are supposed to represent public safety. Representative Rhodes, we are asking you and the members of the committee to vote these bills out of committee and help them to get passed into law. It's fair, it's just, and quite frankly, it's the right thing to do. I just want to remind you all that right after the Ferguson incident, we all went down, and at that time, the Speaker of the House was John Deal. Right after the Ferguson situation, he said, we will not have a Ferguson agenda. Today, there is still no Ferguson agenda. What I mean by that is, if there have been no laws passed, if there have been no policies and procedures put in place, then we are on the same path to creating another Ferguson if we're not careful.
Yes.
Our whole purpose of this conference and urging these bills come out of committee is so that we never have another Ferguson in Missouri, and more specifically, we definitely don't want to see a Ferguson in Kansas City. Yeah. And I think if we keep that on the forefront of our mind, that our purpose for asking for this is to avoid more Ferguson incidents, more young men shot dead by police officers.
Okay. Do you think that I mean, this is the stance of the coalition, is that we could be on a path to another situation like what happened in Ferguson, not just in St. Louis, but in Kansas City or other places in the state?
Well, sure, it could happen. We have all of the necessary ingredients in place. Let me read something that was printed in an interview that was done by Emily O'Connor with the Columbia, Missouri. The Ferguson Commission, appointed by Governor Jay Nixon in November 2014, said in its final report that our institutions and existing systems are not equal, and this has racial repercussions. The commission's purpose was to create a path forward to racial equality in Missouri. It compiled 189 proposals that the commission didn't have the power to enact, including new use of force policies, officer training, and a change in department culture, according to the Associated Press. The commission released its findings in September, stating, "We believe that if we attempt to skirt the difficult truths, if we try to avoid talking about race, if we stop talking about Ferguson, as many in the region would like us to do, then we cannot move forward. Though some may be feeling Ferguson fatigue, we believe that Ferguson can and should represent a collective awakening to the issue that many in our region knew and understood, but for many others were invisible. Now they are not." And I think that's the whole point of everything the coalition is trying to do. We're trying to keep this out front because we want to avoid another killing. Like we've had police killings right here in Kansas City that still have not been resolved.
Yes. One of the ones that was mentioned at the press conference was the Ryan Stokes. Mm-hmm. Situation where Ryan was shot in the back,
right,
and was unarmed and was no threat to anyone.
Plus the truth was not told about their shooting, at least that's my understanding.
Yeah, I think originally his mother was told that he was shot in the front, but forensics proved that it was
in the back. Yeah.
These bills are specific steps that you want to see happen to reform police practice,
yes,
basically.
Yes.
And are there particular things that you want to see the public do in support or to express their feelings about this?
Yes. We would like for the public to contact Representative Todd Richardson. He is the Speaker of the House. He is also the ex officio of all committees of the House of Representatives in the state of Missouri. Now, his phone number is, you want me to give the,
yes,
it's 573-751-4039. I'll say that again, 573-751-4039. And for those of you who would like to send him an email, it's Todd, T-O-D-D, dot Richardson, R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S-O-N, at house.mo.gov. Also, contact Representative Sean Rhodes. He is the chair of the Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness Committee. He represents District 154. He has 6 ex-police officers on his committee. Representative Rhodes continues to be a reserve deputy sheriff. His phone number is area code 573-751-1455. His email address is Sean, S-H-A-W-N, dot Rhodes, R-H-O-A-D-S, at house.mo.gov.
Okay, and I do have his number and email address, as well as Representative Ellington's on our website here at KKFI. I will add the speakers later after the show. I want to go to our next clip here. This is Reverend Sample, and he has something to say about the committee itself and how things are done in Jefferson City.
Let me say, as a white man, that what embarrasses me about this is the very makeup of that committee itself. There are 10 white people and only 2 African-American people on the committee. There are 7 white men on the committee. There are 3 white women and 2 black women. There is not a single African-American man on the committee. 6 of the 7 white men are former police officers. So that we have that point of view very well represented. And I want to say again what Reverend Mims said, that good law enforcement has nothing to hide here. And we support police people, men and women, who indeed obey the law when they enforce the law. So that's intrinsic to us. But how can you withhold legislation that so radically affects the dignity and destiny of black men in this state. I mean, we all know the statistics. We all know how wrongly arrests occur. Yeah. How many more arrests proportionally are made of black men than any one other group in our state. In fact, for that matter, across our country. I want to ask the question, as a person coming out of a tradition of faith, where is the moral grounding for this kind of neglect by a committee? I mean, this is immoral. You know, there are sins of commission, and not acting is a sin of commission. And I call on this committee to take its moral stance and bring these issues out of committee, because they have such radical effect on the destiny on our African American men and other people of color.
You know, Esther, and I we're close friends, so yeah. I call you
no
familiarly
problem.
Here, so yeah. To say.
Yeah.
I saw something here just recently. It was a study that this teacher had done, where she stood in front of a class of high school class of black students and asked how many of them had been stopped on the street by the police. And, you know, over half of the kids held their hand up. Mm-hmm. And then she did the same in a different school in front of a class of white kids and asked them the same question. How many of them had been stopped on the street by the police? And none of them held their hand up, and they all kind of gave her blank stares, like, why would they do that? There really does seem to be a disconnect mm-hmm. Between the lives of that people of color lead in our cities and the lives that people, white people, lead.
That's a fact. Once again, in the interview that was done with Attorney General Chris Koster, he said that the report that was released showed that officers found that he found in his office that black drivers were 66% more likely than white drivers to be stopped based on their proportionate share of the driving age population last year. That's just a fact. That's not figures that we just go out and willy-nilly make up. These are proven facts. And by definition of a bigot, a person who is intolerant toward those holding different opinions. A racist is a person who believes that a particular race is superior to another. So by action, attitude, and demonstration, we have this going on in the police departments. And that includes the police department in Kansas City, Missouri. And even when they do the stops, they've found that contraband hit rates are more likely to occur in the cars that are stopped driven by white drivers than by black and Hispanic.
Well, I want to go to our last clip. And this is once again Reverend Mims. And it's really kind of enlightening and about this particular issue that this does happen. So let's go there.
And I just want to say, the profiling is real. I'm a young black male. I'm in my 20s. And when I'm not in a bow tie and a suit, I'm pulled over often. Most recently, I was pulled over outside of my church at 10 o'clock at night. And I was asked what I was doing out there and if I owned the car I drove. And even if I didn't own the car I drove, what difference did it make? And so I think I support Representative Ellington and these bills because they are aimed at making it a better quality of life for our people in this community. My church is right down the road here. And if the pastor can get pulled over and ask what he's doing outside the church, then I just can imagine what happens. And had I not told the officer, you pulled me over in front of my church. There's no telling what might have transpired if I wasn't able to say, here go the keys to the church right here. Do you want me to unlock the door and let you know? And let you come on in. I support him because I could imagine What could have happened at 10 o'clock at night if I wasn't who I was outside of my church? That's why I support it.
Okay. You know, that's one of those things that you know, where that disconnect is. I mean, this is somebody that's upstanding in the community, but he still gets stopped and treated as if he has done something wrong.
Exactly. So when I look at the Michael Brown case, that was 2014. It was 18-year-old, unarmed black man. He was shot August 2014 by a white police officer in Ferguson. That act spawned a series of legislative attempts to reform law enforcement in Missouri. Now, almost 2 years later, none of these bills has become law.
And it's not just these four bills.
No,
nothing.
It's none of them
has been passed.
In 2015 and 2016 legislative sessions, lawmakers filed more than 100 bills to curb racial profiling and increase transparency in police agencies. March 1 and March 15 marked the last days for senators and representatives to file new bills for the 2016 session. None of these bills throughout the years have been passed into law, and most of these died in the House Committee on Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness.
Well, we're down to the last minute here, or half minute of the show. Do you want to give the telephone number for the for Mr. Rhodes and also the Speaker of the House?
Yes. Representative Todd Richardson is Speaker of the House, and his phone number is area code 573-751-4039. And Representative Sean Rhodes is Chair of the Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness Committee, and his phone number is area code 573-751-1455. And I also want to say that Reverend Dr. Wallace Horsfield Sr. is the convener of the Human Dignity and Economic Justice Coalition.
Yes, and he was going to be here this morning, but yeah. Was under the weather, so we thank him for his willingness, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Circumstances took him somewhere else. So.
And I wanted to say one other thing, too, Jeff. The Human Dignity and Economic Justice Coalition is a statewide coalition. We just are based in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay. We want to thank you for coming in. And up next is the 420 Drug War News.
Thank you for having me.
It's the 420 Drug War News. You know, it seems every day more and more information refuting the drug war is coming forward, and more especially so in regards to medical marijuana. It's astounding the number of people that are coming forward showing positive benefits from the use of cannabis. And one young lady, whose father we're now speaking to, has made enormous progress over the last year. She's a Texan who someday wants to come back to Texas. So I'm speaking of Alexis Bortel, and we're speaking now with her father. Yeah, Dean, your daughter has made a huge splash. She's provided a lot of recognition of the benefits of cannabis, has she not?
She has. She's been very active in the movement, and, you know, she's got big plans in the coming year, but so far things have gone very well for her.
And did we not recognize a one-year anniversary already?
We did on the 18th, and today she's at 378 days and going strong.
And that's without a seizure, correct, sir?
Without one single seizure. Those are consecutive days.
The heck of it is, you know, she's from Texas. They're supposed to come up with a new means of providing CBD only for the Texas marijuana patients, but that's not working for Alexis, is it?
No, and I want to be very clear that we actually did try an oil that would be legal in Texas under their new law, and it didn't work. Alexis, and to be honest, most other epileptic kids depend on THC at levels well beyond what Texas allows. For instance, Texas has got the cap at 0.5%, whereas Alexis's oils she takes twice a day are running about 5.5%, and the acute care oil she uses, the gel, is nearly pure THC. And that busts auras, and, you know, she has a warning sign, which happens now and then still. We use pure THC, and it's broke 6 out of 6 auras during this year plus.
Well, and that's wonderful. And for what it's worth, I'm sure you're aware of it, but the listeners may not be, and that is that Texas Children's Hospital has just completed a round of testing, the CBD only, but found it to be 3 times more effective than the placebo, which is an indicator they're headed in the right direction, right?
For certain symptoms and certain patients, absolutely.
Again, that was Dean Bortel, father of Alexis Bortel, now living in Denver, so that his daughter can remain seizure-free for now well over a year. The full interviews on the most recent cultural baggage. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcast on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce Jaws of Justice Radio, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live and find podcasts of our show on the KKFI website, that is kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Beth Pike, for her work today. My name is Melvin Merritt, asking you to tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Claymer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician Blues with Luscious Liam, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for jazz and blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musicale.